All right, everybody, welcome to Armchair Champions. My name is Jason Walker, and I'm here with...
Alex King.
Yeah, so we kind of got rid of Ethan. Sorry about that.
We're happy about it, let's be honest.
Yeah, he's good. So we're not going to be doing the show on Mondays anymore. Things are getting kind of crazy around here, but we'll be doing something consistently. Probably around middle of the week is when... we're going to be recording these, and then we'll put them up on the website. And eventually these things are going to be on iTunes, so it's going to be pretty sweet.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about that.
But enough with business-like things, because I don't like those. We're going to get into some sports. We're going to go over a lot of different things in this show. We've got Utah State, kind of recap of their last game, previewing this upcoming game against USC. We're going to talk a little NFL. Even a little bit of Utah Jazz, and we're also going to go over college football. So lots of fun things to talk about today.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get right into it. USU, Weber State, what were your thoughts? What did you like? What didn't you like?
So I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's about what we expected, like 45-6, like maybe perhaps not quite as big. The defense really shut down Weber State, and you know they didn't end up scoring like garbage time touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I always like to see just for scoreboard purposes. But I guess the biggest takeaway really was the run game, how super impressive it was. I went and looked this up on the media guide, like the record for most rushing yards. Utah State, this one was like tied for 7th best in Utah State history.
Wow.
Which is a little surprising. I was like, isn't that somewhere up near the top? Although, a fun thing I learned. So, you know, the top three... games as far as like total rushing yards were right. In the same year,
really,
1960.
Wow.
And Utah State ran for, look at this, 2,954 yards in one season that year.
One season. 3,000 yards, yeah. Almost.
For reference, we ran for like 2,100 yards last season.
Jeez.
Like they averaged 268.5 yards per game.
That is impressive. I mean, this game we had 4 rushers, including our quarterback Kent Myers with 50-plus yards, which is pretty good. And then yeah. Mays had a total of 208 yards on 18 carries.
Yeah, and it was ridiculous. He had a really high, you know, yards per carry. And even if you discount like it was like a 66-yard run. If you even discount that, he averaged like 10 yards a carry almost. Maybe it was like 8 yards a carry.
Yeah, and he looked really good. Yes, it was against the Weber State defense, but he still looked good. He looked really good last year. I'm super excited to see him run this year.
Yeah, and one takeaway before we really get into USC, because there wasn't a whole lot to talk about. Definitely the Utah State isn't a proven team yet. One of the things that they haven't really proven is throwing the ball. Kent Myers did go, it was like 11 for 17 for 100 yards. And one thing that my brother brought up that I actually didn't notice at the game, or at least take it into account, was the fact that it was pretty windy, and that really affects throwing the ball. And so you think the coaching staff, you know, we're running for 400 yards. Let's not throw the ball as much. And so I think they're going to reserve a lot of that for USC. I think we're going to see a lot more of Kent Myers throwing the ball. But also... with the success that they had running the game, you have to imagine that Utah State's going to try and run the ball on USC
right. A bunch. I like to believe that they're hiding a few of those big pass plays because, yeah, it was super windy. We never went deep. I don't even think we ran a single play action. Like, they didn't show almost a single, like, one of their, like, distinct pass plays. So hopefully we can surprise the USC defense.
Yeah. That was something I noticed is that the offense looked really simple. And so... I was hoping that wasn't a negative thing, although I've been watching a bunch of NFL recently, and so everything in college looks simple compared to that.
But yeah.
Anyway, so the USC game. So I guess looking, I mean, every Utah State fan had to be looking at that USC-Alabama game. See how it went down. You know, if USC beat Alabama, it was like, oh, holy crap. You know, if Alabama wins decently, it's like, okay, maybe we got a chance. Alabama pummeled USC about the same that we pummeled Weber State. And so perhaps that's an indication of where Alabama is, or maybe USC wasn't quite as high as they should have been. They were pretty hyped, near 20th.
Yeah.
I mean, a 1 versus 20, yeah, you'd expect the 1 to win, but, you know, more like, you know, 30-20 maybe.
Yeah.
That kind of score.
It wasn't close. USC couldn't get their offense going, and Alabama ran all over them. Alabama looked really good. USC didn't.
Like, yeah.
Simple as that. Like, yeah. I didn't actually get to watch this game, unfortunately.
Yeah, neither did I.
But looking at the stat line, USC's quarterback didn't look good. They didn't really get the run going. So
no, that something. I also looked at the box score, and I actually, for a 52-6 game, I wasn't actually blown away by Alabama's offensive stats.
Right.
They had a lot of big plays, and obviously in that kind of game, you're going to have a lot of big plays. But it wasn't like, you know, Devontae Mays averaging like a ton of yards per carry. But except the one guy, he had like a 73-yard run.
Right.
And outside of that, he only had like 5 or 6 yards per carry, which is still pretty impressive. But the biggest thing for Alabama in this game was the defense.
Yeah.
They shut down like the was Juju Smith Schuster, I think was his name. I just looked at it. He was their number one wide receiver, like really hyped. He had like one catch for 9 yards.
Yeah.
Like they completely shut him down.
And USU's defense did a great job shutting down the Weber State's offense. I mean, still Weber State offense.
Yeah.
And granted, there was 3 really big drops by Weber State.
Yeah.
That helped our yards look even better, but we looked good rushing the quarterback. We looked way better than we did last year on the run, so.
Yeah.
So hopefully USC just struggles with these strong defenses, and we can go in with a strong defense, surprise them in the air, Mays is consistent, and maybe pull out a win.
Yeah, I think that is possible. Obviously, still Utah State's going to be an underdog. They're playing at USC. So this is definitely far from that easy winnable game that we'd all like it to be the way Weber State was. Course. But I do like what you said, like if we can rush the quarterback the way we did against Weber, you know, bother USC's quarterback because he's a new quarterback. And so, I mean, that's what Alabama did. They bothered him, didn't let him do anything. And so if we can do the same thing and just really cut out the air attack by making their quarterback ineffective, then that'll do wonders for Utah State. And it'll obviously relieve a lot of pressure on the offense, which hopefully will be, you know, moving forward, running the ball well, throwing the ball just like you said.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully our defense can come in and probably not do as well as Alabama's defense did shutting them down, but hopefully we can go in, put some pressure on the quarterback, maybe get him a little aggravated early, stop or at least slow down the run. Mays, pass game. I don't think USU will win this game, but there's a definite chance they could if all of these pieces fall together.
Yeah, it's kind of got to be that storm of events.
Exactly.
Because, yeah, USC still is a Pac-12 team. Still good. They have lots of talent. They're one of the top recruiters consistently, and yet mysteriously, they haven't been good for a while. Like, really good.
Right. Like, every year you expect USC to be this really good team, and for the past few years, they just look like an average Pac-12 team.
Yeah.
They don't have any of these huge wins. I don't know. I'm not impressed with USC, especially this year, but in the past few years, they haven't looked like this winning team that we've seen in the past.
Yeah. They haven't been able to put together really the personnel, probably on the coaching staff and in the program, because the players are there.
I think they've changed their coach like 6 times or something in the past like 5 years.
And that is one of the indicators of just could be like in the administration, like above the coaching staff, where the athletic director.
Right.
Where they're not able to bring in good guys. Also, I actually was watching a video with Colin Cowherd. He was talking about how USC just can't pull in any of the good coaches. Like, you know, they talked to was John Harbaugh, who's now in Michigan, when, you know, he was out of a job. You know, they called him. You know, just different guys, head coaches, like, they don't want to go to USC for whatever reason. It's just been a bad program. And so they don't want to be there. It's kind of like the Knicks job in the NBA. Nobody wants to be the head coach of the Knicks.
Which is weird because the Knicks suck, whereas USC in the past has been one of the most dominant teams in college football.
It's a historic college as far as football.
Coaches talk, though, man. If you have issues with your coaches, they'll tell the other coaches what you're doing wrong, and these big coaches won't want to go to your school.
Yeah, they don't want to be dealing with bad athletic directors and administrators who are towering over them, and also just the expectations.
Yeah, exactly.
So enough with USC and Utah State. Again, go Aggies. We'll hope they win. So we're going to go into critical condition. This is our segment where, along with being armchair champions, we're going to be armchair doctors. And we're going to bring in our patient today. And last week our patient was Tony Romo, but this week our patient is a team, and it's the Minnesota Vikings. And so we have Teddy Bridgewater, who went down with an injury, and he's going to be out for basically like the entire season.
Yeah, it's pretty much the entire season.
Yeah.
If not the entire season.
Yeah, see, he's effectively gone. And initially we were wondering, like, well, how are they going to do? They had their backup quarterback, but then they traded for Sam Bradford. They traded a first-round pick for Sam Bradford.
Correct.
And so the question is, will Minnesota be able to, they had a good season last year, will they be able to repeat that? They went 11-5, they won the division, and they went to the playoffs. Can they repeat that and maybe even take another step like they were hoping? And I guess my diagnosis is not really. I would have said that before Teddy Bridgewater was injured. I was never really high on the Minnesota Vikings. Love Adrian Peterson, but frankly, running backs do not carry the team by themselves. You know, example one, Barry Sanders. In my opinion, one of the greatest running backs, really second only to Jim Brown. And he can't carry the team, neither can Adrian Peterson.
Right. I think when we look at this team as a patient, we can see that the legs work really well. Adrian Peterson is obviously one of, if not the best running back in the league right now. They have a couple really good wide receivers in Stephon Diggs, and hopefully Laquon Treadwell can come in and do really well this year. Before Teddy Bridgewater went down, had them going about 9-7. And barely missing the playoffs, or barely making it into the playoffs, depending on how it worked out. But as a St. Louis Rams fan, I was a huge Sam Bradford fan when he came in. He got that Rookie of the Year his first year. He led one of the worst offenses to the almost to the playoffs twice. Didn't make it, but almost. And I think the wide receiver core at the Vikings is the best wide receiver core he's had since he's entered the league, which is saying a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't think that our patient here can recover enough to win, definitely not enough to win the division, but I don't think they can even sneak in at the wild card. But I think our patient will recover faster and will look better than the other diagnoses I've been hearing from other doctors around.
Yeah. It also brings up a question. What happens when Teddy Bridgewater comes back? Is he going to get into a competition with Sam Bradford? I mean, the fact that they made this knee-jerk reaction to trade a first-round pick for another quarterback, who albeit is slightly older than Teddy Bridgewater, but is still pretty young. What does that say about Teddy Bridgewater and their confidence in him?
So I like Teddy Bridgewater. I really do. And I hate to say it, but on the field, Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Bradford are both pretty average quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They're not stellar. They don't have huge arms. They're just, I want to say, consistent.
Yeah. They're kind of game managers. Look at Alex Smith. I feel like is the epitome of, like, you know, might say the perfect game manager.
Exactly.
Where he's putting up consistent numbers. I'm looking at Teddy Bridgewater's stats. 65 completion percentage, which is good.
Pretty good, yeah.
14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Kind of low, at least for touchdowns.
I mean, he has Adrian Peterson. So
yes, this is true.
Pass touchdowns are going to look a little worse because they're going to give it to Adrian Peterson almost every time.
Yeah. His rating, 88.7. QBR, 62.71, which, you know, the total QBR is not ideal. But again, he's a game manager at this point.
Right.
And the passer rating is decent. You know, 88.7, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
A lot of people would like that.
Yeah.
At least more than what they got.
Yeah, so the big thing I hear with Teddy Bridgewater is that he puts in a lot of work in the film room and puts in a lot of work at practice. So they'll miss him at practice, but he can still put in that work in the film room and hopefully help this team with Sam Bradford prepare for the games.
Yeah. And if Teddy Bridgewater does work really hard. I mean, that's one of the secrets to Tom Brady is the fact that he is just a workaholic. He just, you hear his routine, like, you know, he's got a ridiculous diet, very strict. It's like tons of fruits and vegetables, you know, no alcohol and different things like that, putting no junk into his body, and, you know, works really hard at practice, is really intense. And so if Bridgewater can do that, then he can perhaps be successful in the league. Again, he may not be, you know, all-time great status, but make a few Pro Bowls maybe if he's lucky.
Yeah, I think Tom Brady has a little bit more of that natural talent.
Yeah, a little bit.
But for sure, his regimen is the reason he's still one of the top quarterbacks at 39, I believe he is.
Yeah, he's 39, and it's ridiculous.
With a team that continues to revolve, he's had like 20 different cats at hyperbole, but he's had quite a few different running backs behind him. His wide receiver core has changed over the years. Yeah.
It's really only been like the last 4 or 5 years that he's had a consistent wide receiver core. Before then, who knows?
Yeah. And he's still looked impressive every single year. And if Teddy Bridgewater can put in that work, maybe not have quite as much talent, but put in that work, I think he can be a pretty dang good quarterback. For a few years.
Yeah, and so one thing to consider, is this going to put more pressure on Adrian Peterson? You know, because they're not going to have Teddy Bridgewater, and Sam Bradford's going to have to come in and learn on the fly, because it can't be that easy to switch teams, as much as people might want to think, oh, you're just basically transplanting one player to another team. Doesn't quite work that way. You got to learn an entire new system and playbook, culture, things like that. And so he's not just going to come in and be the same Sam Bradford he was before, however good that was.
That might be a good thing. The Vikings offense, their system might work better for Bradford. I don't think Chip Kelly, honestly, we can talk about this another week, but I don't think Chip Kelly's offense belongs in NFL football in general.
Yeah, not really.
But it didn't fit most of his offensive threats. So I think the Vikings system might work better for Bradford. He's not going to all of a sudden be this super great quarterback that's going to just take over games, but he might look a little bit more impressive than he did at the Eagles, if he can stay healthy, that is.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping that Adrian Peterson does well. I have him on one of my fantasy teams.
Nice.
And so, Adrian Peterson, you want to break that rushing record this year? Please do. Really, please do. And it would help Sam Bradford a ton, because to be able to have a rushing game really opens up the passing game. You know, there's the eternal debate. Does the run set up the pass, or the pass set up the run? It's either way. If you're doing one, the other's set up.
Exactly.
And so if it sets up the play-action game, which, I mean, Tom Brady uses the play-action game, and Peyton Manning was really good at it too.
Right.
And it just really opens up a lot of things downfield and just everywhere.
Yeah, I'm excited for Sam Bradford to actually have the opportunity to show his potential, because since he's entered the league, I've been waiting for Sam Bradford to be this star quarterback, and unfortunately he's never going to meet those original expectations. But I think he could be like a tier two quarterback, like right around Tyrod Taylor, on par with Teddy Bridgewater. Marcus Mariota right now, though I think Marcus Mariota is going to get a lot better in the coming years. But
yeah. Sam Bradford, he's a little behind the curve because he's like 28. He's a little older than I thought he was.
Yeah, and he's had so many injuries at this point. One more season-ending injury. It's probably a career-ending injury at this point. So
yeah. Just looking at his stats, he hasn't really had that one superb year.
He's only had one, like, full year as a starting quarterback, and that was with an abysmal St. Louis Rams wide receiving core.
Yeah.
Granted, he did lose his job last year, I believe. Did he get benched at all last year?
In Philadelphia?
Yeah.
No, he started every game he played.
Okay,
in.
Never mind.
He only played in 14 games. He missed 2 games, went 7-7 as a starter. It was actually a decent year if you're looking at game managers. Put up those Alex Smith numbers. 3,700 yards, 19-14, touchdown, interception.
And if you believe that it was the system that was the problem, like, obviously you can't put everything on the system.
Yeah.
But if the system doesn't work, you're not going to look good.
Yeah.
I mean, look at DeMarco Murray, one of the best running backs in the league right now, looked abysmal in Philadelphia.
Yeah, he rushed for, like, 1,800 yards and then for 700.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. Hopefully he'll do better in Tennessee.
Hope so.
So the diagnosis for the Minnesota Vikings.
Good, not great.
Yeah, not great. They'll recover sort of, but they're not looking like a Super Bowl team anytime soon.
No.
And every year Adrian Peterson's getting older. The last of the great running backs, in my opinion. So we're going to shift over to the NBA. We're going to talk specifically about the Utah Jazz and perhaps broaden our horizon a little bit into the NBA as far as how people build teams.
Yeah.
So I read this article. It was a really great article on slcdunk.com. It's like my favorite Utah Jazz blog ever.
I don't think I've read any of the articles before this one, but it was extremely well written and I enjoyed reading it. Even if I disagreed with what he had said, even though I don't, I still would have enjoyed reading the article because it's very well written.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of the stuff you'll see is obviously biased towards the Jazz being really good. That's a lot of the hype.
It's SLC Dunk. It's not.
Yeah, it's a Utah Jazz blog.
Yeah.
And it's written by Utah Jazz fans. But this was one of the more excellent articles I've read in a while, and especially for an article in August, September area.
Right.
And so the main idea of the article is talking about, I mean, the title of the article is "The Utah Jazz Are Like No Other Team." And it mentions, like, the Golden State Warriors and talks about how the Warriors, just in one of these paragraphs, how they kind of looked at what they had, you know, they kind of looked at the NBA and saw how they could kind of exploit exploit something in the NBA that they wouldn't expect. So you look at Golden State's offensive system. It's a three-point barrage. They really went small ball, you know, Draymond Green. He was a big surprise to the NBA with how good he was,
right,
with his size and skill set and everything. And so really they took the whole NBA by a storm. You see these in most sports. You have somebody that they come up with something new. Look at the Miami Dolphins when they pulled the Wildcat out of the hat. And it surprised the NBA for like half a season.
Yeah, look at them now. They're nowhere. But that half season, they're pretty good.
Yeah. And so this person, Milo is like the username. I don't really have the actual name. But she was talking about the Utah Jazz. They're a very unique team. You look at how they play. It's really slow. It's sometimes frustratingly slow, especially when you compare them to the Warriors, who are just like up and down the court all the time. The Jazz were like last in basically every stat that involved pace, and by a long ways.
Right.
But they have a roster. They're playing two big men. They've got Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert. And it's kind of rare in the NBA now to play two big men like that, because you know, they're both traditional big men, both can play center. You know, Derek Favors started at center for at least 1 year.
Yeah.
And so it's really old-fashioned at this point, but kind of radical in its own way because of that.
Especially once when we brought in Rudy Gobert, it was something new. I mean, it's coming back, but I guess it's a retro new.
Like, yeah.
It wasn't in the league now, but it has been in the past.
Yeah.
I guess.
And so with this, they've got, you mean, look at a potential, at least future starting roster. I mean, right now they're going to be starting like George Hill, Rodney Hood, Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert. They've also got Dante Exum, who's, you know, 6'6". He's basically kind of like Magic Johnson in the sense of his body and ability. I'm not saying he is Magic Johnson, but he's kind of that athletic freak in a way.
Yeah. Has incredible reach.
Yeah. And especially for a point guard. And he's quicker than most of the point guards. But anyway, so with the Utah Jazz, they've got this unique roster with a unique playing style. They pass the ball a ton. They move it around. They get everybody involved. They play lockdown defense. I mean, that's their thing. They play defense. They will shut you down, especially that second half of the season after they traded Enes Kanter. That defense was suffocating. It was historic how good it was.
Yeah. It was impressive to watch. Rudy Gobert on defense is one of my favorite players to watch. Rudy Gobert on offense, abysmal.
Yeah.
How many times have we seen him try and dribble the ball and he like kicks it into the stands? But you look at him on defense and he will shut you down.
Yeah. I'll say this. I had a man crush on Rudy Gobert from like the moment I first saw his draft. Like before the Jazz even drafted him or anything, I was watching some of his stuff because I saw there's a 7'2" big man with a 7'9" reach. I was like, oh, I'm gonna watch this guy, and he's still about the same as he was then, albeit better. But he was the first person that I would, like, when they were on defense, I would just watch him. I wouldn't watch the ball. I'd watch him. What is he doing? He's the first player I ever did that with. So
yeah, he's super impressive.
Yeah,
Favors is a great big man underneath. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So the question is, with all this, can the Utah Jazz basically did what Golden State did and try and almost revolutionize or use this revolutionary, you know, tactic, roster? Can they do what Golden State did and kind of take the NBA off guard?
I think so, especially – so we've gotten better than last year, but looking at last year, LeBron James could not get a win in Salt Lake City. The Warriors struggled against the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
The Clippers, we shut down their offense. The Spurs, to a lesser extent, we shut them down.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've added defensive and these – I'm going to say smaller offensive threats. It's not exactly what I mean. We'll explain that in a minute. But they got better on defense. Their bench got better. But looking at last year, they were already impressive. And this year, they're going to be good.
And last year, they were bombarded by injuries. And so, I mean, definitely health. You can't just guarantee that they're going to be healthy this year. But if they are healthy... which I think they can. I feel like some of the injury concerns are perhaps a little exaggerated because it's really just like the one season.
Yeah.
And so for them staying healthy, I mean, Rudy Gobert staying, Derek Favors, they stay healthy like the whole season. It'll be ridiculous
to see. Watch out for this team because they're going to be good.
Yeah. They'll be really good.
Because even if we have one injury, we have plenty of – our third stringers are still pretty good, especially for the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, you take our bench is the best in the NBA right now.
Yeah, right now.
So, I mean, you take one of them, start them, put one of our third stringers in, we still look like a dang good team.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super excited for this. I'm super excited to see how we can fit Joe Johnson to our offense. He's one of those guys that can just make offense out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I think he touches in that in the article, how Joe Johnson's just going to make offense happen. You don't have to run this offensive scheme. No, he's just going to make offense happen.
It's ISO Joe, man.
Yeah.
It's just what he does.
Yeah, and I mean, Gordon Hayward was clutch on offense. There's is nothing to laugh at on defense. He's really good on defense. So. Yeah,
he's a really good all-around player.
Yeah.
He's that Swiss Army knife that can do basically everything on the floor. And I've been really impressed with how Gordon Hayward has improved over his career. I've never really been on the Gordon Hayward bandwagon as far as him being a star player. I don't think anybody really is. He's going to be a good player. He is a good player now.
Right.
But he's really impressed me. He's done his darndest to prove me wrong, and I love that. And like I said, he's gone a long way. When I watched an old highlight reel of him, it was like back in his rookie season. And I remember back then, I was thinking, this kid looks awkward. Doesn't really look like he knows how to play basketball. I say the same things of Dante Exum these days. And right after I watched that old one, I watched from last season. It's like, this guy looks smooth. He knows how to play. He's just really good.
He's a really good leader, too. That's what I really like about him. He might not be like this star that gets talked about week in, week out, like LeBron James and Steph Curry. But he's consistent, and he's clutch when we need him to. And he's the leader of what's going to be a really good team.
Yeah.
I mean, and we haven't even touched on how we added George Hill and Boris Diaw.
Yeah.
Both really good on defense.
Yeah, I think the biggest acquisition was George Hill. Bigger than Joe Johnson, and obviously bigger than Boris Diaw. Just the fact that bringing in a starting caliber point guard, an above average starting caliber point guard, it's absolutely huge because that was the biggest talking point of last season. The Utah Jazz don't have a point guard. The Utah Jazz don't have a point guard. Blah, 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 blah. Dante Exum's gone. You know.
Yeah.
That was like the one thing they were missing. Now they have it.
Now they have him, and he can help build Dante Exum up.
Yeah.
And then in a couple of years, Dante Exum will be our starter. George Hill will be around.
Yeah.
But Dante Exum will hopefully be the star that everyone wants him to be.
Yeah. And that's something that I've kind of said about the Utah Jazz. If the Jazz want to win a championship, it's going to depend on Dante Exum. Not Gordon Hayward or Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert. If Dante Exum becomes a star, they're going to be in that. They're going to have that legitimate championship window for however long it's going to be. And obviously not guaranteeing they win a championship, but...
They will definitely have the opportunity.
Yeah. If he's like an all-star, we'll say that, a legitimate all-star, then they'll have that chance. He doesn't necessarily need to be like Hall of Fame caliber. He doesn't need to be Magic Johnson. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to move on to the NFL. Really exciting. I've been waiting on this forever. It's always exciting when football starts again. We had college football last week, and we're going to get to that after we get to the NFL. But I like the NFL better in college for a number of reasons. There's more passion in college football, but NFL is just better football.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like in NFL, I'm much more likely to focus on individual players. Like, yeah. I can follow Alabama as a team, but I definitely don't follow, like, Alabama's quarterback as much.
Yeah.
But I definitely look and see what Aaron Rodgers is doing.
Yeah.
I love to follow Tom Brady. I love the NFL. I love, like... the individual players and then how they make this team up of these individual players.
Yeah. And there's a lot more roster consistency in the NFL than in college. I mean, in college, you're guaranteed every 4 years, everybody's gone with a handful of injury exceptions and
exactly.
stuff. Whereas the NFL, 4 years, you know, you'll still have a good number of players.
The big people on your team will probably be the same unless somebody retired, which is far less common than it is in... Or I guess they don't retire in college football, but they leave in college football.
They just graduate.
Exactly.
So let's look at the games to watch, the ones that at least I'm kind of paying attention to. I think they'll have good implications. They'll just be good games in general.
Yeah.
There's five that I kind of picked out, and you might have more or less, whatever you want. So the first one, this is a no-brainer. It's the Thursday game, Broncos versus Panthers, the Super Bowl rematch. I mean, come on, there's a storyline. You know, the Broncos or the Panthers want to get revenge. Obviously, even if they won the game 1,000-0, Broncos fans would take it every day of the week if it meant they won the Super Bowl. It won't make up for losing it, but still.
Yeah.
The Panthers are going to be out for revenge.
First game of the season, Super Bowl rematch. First game without Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
I mean, this game has huge implications. Unfortunately, I'm on the side of that Broncos are not going to be a good team this year and that they're not even going to make the playoffs this year. Yeah. So I think their defense will look as impressive, but I don't think they move the ball on offense very much at all.
See, I was kind of in the same boat. I do think they can miss the playoffs, although Ethan will very much tell you off. He did that on one of his shows. Yeah. But he has a really good point in the sense that, you know, why are people saying the Broncos aren't going to be good? Quarterback. How was their quarterback play last year? It sucked. It was the worst in the league. Obviously, they did lose a couple of players on defense, and one thing I look at is I don't know if the Broncos can repeat such a dominant defensive performance.
Yeah.
But still, they're going to be in the hunt for the playoffs. Whether or not they'll make it, just wait 17 weeks. We'll find out.
Sure. CJ Anderson last year, if you ask Ethan, he was clutch at the end of season and was an offensive threat. I don't think CJ Anderson was an offensive threat for that offense for 90% of the season. He had a couple games where he looked pretty good, but he got benched for Ronnie Hillman. I mean, did not look great. So I don't think this one's going to be very close. I think the defense is going to give their team a few points, set them up for a few points, but I think overall this is going to look like a Panthers domination.
I can see that happening. I did pick the Broncos in this game, but obviously I've been wrong way too many times before.
I mean, to be fair, I picked the Panthers in the Super Bowl as well, and they choked hard. So
yeah, really hard.
So the Broncos could surprise me again. I would love to see a defensive team that can win consistently because I love defenses. as fun as it is to watch these high-octane offenses, there's so many of them, whereas there's so little teams that are winning because of their defense.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
and obviously another storyline, really just for the entire season, is Cam Newton. Can he repeat what he did last year?
Can he come back from that embarrassment and have another great season like he did last year?
Yeah, definitely look at that. So the next one I have is the Cardinals-Patriots. I'm really looking at this game more because obviously I'm a big Patriots fan, so I'm going to watch this game no matter what. I'll watch Bills or the Patriots versus anybody.
Right.
But obviously, Cardinals, I have them as one of the best teams in the NFC, if not the best team, depending on Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald, if they can continue to evade Father Time.
Yes.
But obviously, Brady-less Patriots, you know, one of the big storylines, Jimmy Garoppolo, how is he going to do? Can he pull a Tom Brady on Tom Brady? I think no, but that's the storyline that's going to be out there. If Jimmy Garoppolo comes out here and throws for 300 yards, expect every headline to say, is Jimmy Garoppolo going to replace Tom Brady?
Yeah. So Patriots and Cardinals, if you ask most of the experts, at least one of these teams will be in the Super Bowl at the end of the year. I really wish Tom Brady could be in this game because it would have this game has huge implications if Brady's in it for the end of the season.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the storyline isn't how are these two Super Bowl teams going to play? It's how is Garoppolo going to do?
Yeah.
I do think Carson Palmer's going to look good in the beginning of the season, but I think towards the end of the season, he's going to hit a cliff and look abysmal just like he did last year.
He's old. He's not like Tom Brady.
He's old and injured.
Yeah, that too.
He's gonna be like Peyton Manning 2 years ago. Bad. He's gonna start out the season pretty good, but by the end, he's gonna look like a walking bag of potatoes.
Yeah, probably. So, there's that game. Next one, Bengals Jets, and I think perhaps these two teams, these are gonna be guys vying for those wild card spots. They're two playoff caliber teams, in my opinion. I think the Jets are really going to be giving the Patriots a run for their money, especially with the first four games of the Patriots season kind of in the air a little bit.
Right.
As far as, you know, you think they'd go like 3-1, 4-0 with Tom Brady. Now it's like
hoping for 2-2.
Yeah, they could go 2-2, 1-3, you know, either one.
Exactly.
But the Bengals, they're going to be more in the fight for their division than the Jets are. They're going to be in it with the Steelers. It's really going to be between those two. This thing could have big implications later down the season if we get to week 17 and, you know, they're like both 9-6. And if they both win their games, you know, tiebreaker goes to, well, the winner of that one week one game back there,
yeah,
they get it because they won the head-to-head matchup.
Yeah, exactly. I think both of these teams will be competing for that wild card spot. I don't think the Bengals – I have the Steelers going to the Super Bowl. So I don't think the Bengals are able to pass the Steelers in the regular season.
Yeah.
And I think the Jets will give a fight to the Patriots because of these first four games. But I think Tom Brady secures the division win. So the Jets and the Bengals will be fighting for that wild card. So this game is pretty huge in that regard.
Yeah. All right, the next one, Steelers and Redskins. The Redskins, they had a pretty decent year last year. I know a Redskins fan, and he's pretty hyped about it. They added Josh Norman.
Yeah.
You know, self-proclaimed best corner in the NFL, kind of like Richard Sherman did.
He was impressive last year. I don't think he's as high as definitely he thinks, but I think he's actually overrated by a few of the other experts. He's a good cornerback, but I think it's Richard Peterson of the Cardinals. Definitely fighting for that spot. Patrick Peterson, thank you. Patrick Peterson, I think, is the best corner. I think Richard Sherman fights for that every year.
Yeah.
Josh Norman's pretty good.
He's also a little older, so you wonder. He just kind of came out of nowhere to be this really good corner, Pro Bowl and everything.
Right.
And obviously going to a different scheme. Look what happened to Darrelle Revis. What did he do when he went from the Jets to the Buccaneers? He's horrible.
Right.
Then he goes to the Patriots. He's a beast. Goes back to the Jets. Still good. You just got to be in the right system.
I do think Kirk Cousins has a repeat season. I think he looks as good, if not better, than he did last year. So I really hope he impresses me this year. And the other thing is DeSean Jackson is in a contract year, so I think he's going to be fighting for every single yard so he can get that last big paycheck before he hits his wall and goes downhill.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same situation with Cam Newton as I am with Kirk Cousins. It's like I'm skeptical that they'll repeat how good they were, and obviously Cam Newton was a lot better than Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I agree. Especially, I agree on the Cam Newton. I don't think he'll... I'm skeptical whether he can repeat the season, and I know as a team, they will not be able to.
Yeah, obviously you can't repeat 15-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins, I'd like to see him succeed. I'm generally more of a fan of Kirk Cousins, more than I was of RG3.
See, I'm just a fan of you like that.
You like that? Or however you said that. I saw that clip the other day, and yeah. I can't replicate it.
Randomly, I'll see you in the hall, and I'll just go, you like that?
You like that? Yeah. That's really funny. All right, so really quick, last one. This is another one kind of like the Bengals-Jets. It's the Giants-Cowboys. I mean, even without Tony Romo, the NFC East is a toss-up. Like, just flip some coins, roll some die, draw straws, figure out who's going to win the division. I don't think they've had a repeat champion. In fact, this, they haven't had a repeat champion since, like, the Giants 5 years ago.
Right. So I think that division is the exact same as the Pac-12 in college football, where they just beat the crap out of each other, and then one team just, like, slowly just pops above the rest.
I'm still alive.
You cannot predict preseason. It could be the Eagles. It could be the Cowboys. It could be the Giants. Or it could be the Redskins who win this division. You never know.
Yeah. And so this is going to be one of those things where this is another one. Big implications down the season. Again, they're both like 8-7 or however the records match up in week 16. And they got to win another game. Head-to-head matchups. It's these random games. And also, keeping an eye on Dak Prescott, that's one that I like to keep my eye on. Dak Prescott's another guy I'd like to see succeed. Mm-hmm. He's in a really good situation to do it. He's really in the best situation of, like, any young quarterback.
Yeah. So with Tony Romo, I actually had the Cowboys doing pretty well this season. Without him, it's really on Prescott's shoulders.
Yeah.
If he does well, the Cowboys will do well.
Mm-hmm.
If not, they're not going to look good. They're going to look like the Eagles did last year.
Yeah. All right, so moving on from the NFL, we're going to go into college football.
Probably one of the best week ones ever.
Yeah, it was exciting.
There was few upsets. There was some really high-scoring games, some really good games.
Thrillers.
And then there was Alabama-USC that I loved because I hate USC, so I'd love to see them just get decimated.
Just meh.
But it's not fun football to watch.
Unless you're Alabama. Or
yeah, if you're an Alabama fan. I guess if you're an Alabama fan, you probably enjoyed that game. I mean, especially if you're in the stands.
Yeah.
But I think everybody would rather see like a close game where it actually comes down to the fourth quarter and not like, oh, well, this is over at half.
Yeah. You'd like to be, you know, the Texas fan in the Texas-Notre Dame game. Like,
oh, yeah. Win that in double overtime.
The craziest thing.
So here's the thing. Texas always has to overshadow Texas A&M. Texas A&M takes UCLA to a overtime finish. Texas has to block a field goal and run it back. Was that Texas who blocked it?
I think it was Notre Dame who did that.
It was. Okay, anyways. So Texas had to take it to a double overtime for the win just so that they looked a little bit better than Texas A&M.
Of course. You go to two at one overtime, I go to two.
Yeah.
You do two, I do seven.
Yeah.
Do they go as far as seven?
They go until they go.
I guess that's true. They do 2-point conversions at one
point.
Yeah.
You after the third, I think it's after the third overtime, you have to start going for two on touchdowns. So, I mean, after that, there's a lot of times it just ends because somebody gets a 2-point and somebody doesn't.
Where's Billy Boise State? Go for two the first time.
Yeah. I loved that.
Or was
Boise
that
State team.
Was that one overtime or two? I think it was just one. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. If you asked Mason, the co-host on my other show, of Competitive Bystanders, he would quote exactly what happened in that game because he is a pretty big Boise State fan, and he's shown me those clips like 20 times. But I can't remember what overtime it was in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, still a super impressive play if you've never watched it.
Yeah, I remember watching that, and I'd probably go and watch it again. So looking at the – top 25, obviously. So some upsets. It was Oklahoma lost to Houston, which when I first heard that, I thought, that's a nice upset. And then I saw that it was a 3-versus-50 matchup, and so I was like, okay, that's not as bad.
Well, and Houston did the exact same thing last year. Sorry, I'm blanking on who, but they upset another team at the end of the season. So it's becoming like a normal thing that they're quote-unquote upsetting these higher-ranked teams.
Yeah.
LSU getting upset by Wisconsin. And here's the two differences I see in these two games. Oklahoma put up a good fight. Houston just put up a better defense and had the one 10-point differential play where they got the missed field goal and ran it back for a touchdown. 10-point differential completely swung that game and what's won them the game. LSU didn't look impressive. Their quarterback looked nervous, didn't look confident. Fournette, probably one most NFL-ready running back in college football right now, did all right. For Fournette, though, it's completely average, where his team needed him to step up and he couldn't.
Yeah.
The Wisconsin defense did really good at slowing him down, and he did not look good in that first half, and he couldn't get enough going in the second half to win this.
You know, it's a pretty low-scoring game. And so you look at kind of the consequences of those. Houston, they jumped all the way to number 6. I mean, they jumped 9 spots.
Right.
And I think that was the highest jump. Well, actually, the highest jump probably belongs to Wisconsin, but they were out of the rankings, so.
Yeah.
They jumped more than 15 spots from out of wherever they were at to number 10.
Yeah, I think the Wisconsin and probably the Texas may have been moved up a little bit farther than they probably should have, but I guess we'll see at the end of the season. I mean, if Wisconsin and Texas keep it up, maybe they were just placed too low preseason, but
I think Texas stayed the same.
Texas is number 11.
Yeah, they're number 11. It doesn't say they moved up.
They were right? Texas was unranked preseason.
Were they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why it says they didn't move any.
An idiot. They weren't on the
I should know that because it says the same for Wisconsin.
The other big thing, Oklahoma only dropped to 14 from 3. LSU dropped to 21 from 5.
Yeah, and see, I can see why Oklahoma didn't fall too far because, again, it was the 15th team or 15th ranked team. So it's not that bad. You losing to a ranked team, you lost by 10. It's not that bad.
And they looked competitive at least for 3 quarters. They had the lead for most of the first half.
Yeah.
I think I've watched so much college football, but I think Houston kicked a field goal at the end of the half to take the lead. But it was competitive for most of the game.
Yeah, and it's not like they just laid an egg. They played good. And it's not like Tennessee, who just absolutely it was the most disappointing win ever probably in Tennessee history to win against Appalachian State 20-13, be behind
the entire game.
Yeah,
they were, and they had to win it in overtime against Appalachian State.
And for a team that won their game, they dropped 8 spots.
Yeah.
Which was like the second most.
Yeah, so on my other show, Overcompetitive Bystanders, we actually, both hosts, picked Tennessee as the one team we thought was overranked too high. And we actually said they should be around 16-17. So
it's about where they're at.
Yeah, so that's where they ended up. So we're pretty happy on that.
You're so smart. You're an armchair champion.
So we actually talked about this again on our show. Sorry for promoting our show. But we talked about how it wasn't so much that, oh, they just looked so bad, let's move them back 8 spots. But so many teams moved up. You had to make a spot for Wisconsin, Texas. Let's see, who jumped? Houston jumped. Georgia jumped. A few other teams jumped them, and so they kind of just kept getting pushed back and pushed back and ended up in that 17 spot.
Yeah. Honestly, when it comes to preseason rankings, I bash on the preseason rankings all the time. It's basically the reset button for all the major programs. Every year, reset. All right, Alabama, number 1. Let's go. It's just like, just keep hyping all these programs, and then you get a week 1 like this, which I feel like is not super uncommon, where you get some of these top 10 teams upset, and it's just, they turn out to not be as good, Tennessee being one of them. They're not a top 10 team, at least not at the moment. They can obviously recover from this.
Yeah, these upsets would be much bigger if it was at the end of the season where a unranked team is beating a number 5 team, or a number 15 is beating number 3, or Even an unranked team beating number 10 would be pretty big at the end of the season. But they're preseason ranking, so they don't hold as much.
Yeah. You know. And that's why that's one of the positives I liked about the BCS is the fact that they came out with their first rankings after, like, what, 6, 7, 8 weeks? And so you didn't have this bias where it's kind of like this, where if we didn't do a ranking in for the preseason and Tennessee did this against Appalachian State, would they be top 25? Maybe.
Possibly. So the thing with Tennessee, and we'll probably talk about this in a minute, but they're doing the same thing they did last year where they're not losing, but like almost losing games they shouldn't even be close in. Last year they lost a few games where they shouldn't even been close. So we'll see towards the end of the season if they can pick it back up. But
yeah. So moving into week two. We had an exciting week one. Week two looks boring.
Week two, I'll be watching week one NFL.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the teams these guys are playing. This is apparently garbage week for all the top 25 teams. Because I looked through, when I was looking for games I wanted to talk about for week two, I looked at the top 25 teams, what teams they're playing. I didn't see none of them are playing each other.
Yeah.
Which is super disappointing. And they're not even playing good teams, like Alabama, Western Kentucky, Clemson, Troy, Florida State, Charleston Southern. They have a football team?
Apparently.
Ohio State, they're playing Tulsa. Okay, not that bad. They're a decent program. UCF, they went 0-12 last season. They 1-0 now, but still.
They probably could end up 1-11.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at their schedule at all, but they're not a good team, that's for sure.
They're probably about to be 1-1 at the very least. I mean, they're playing Michigan.
I would really hope so. Because I like Michigan because they're, not, again, that defensive team that's shown they can win.
Yeah, and they did win 63-3 against Hawaii. So we know they didn't lay down for a bad team. And just go down the list, Idaho, Akron, UTEP, Syracuse. Arkansas is not a bad one, TCU versus Arkansas.
Yeah, that one could be a good game.
That is a decent game. Notre Dame playing Nevada, who knows. But the games that I put my eye on, I kind of cheated. I Googled this. Yeah, although I didn't just copy and paste the ones I was told.
Right.
I looked at the ones that I was actually interested in. So, and you alluded to this, Tennessee versus Virginia Tech. A lot of this is going to be, all right, what's Tennessee going to do? They're playing this game at the Bristol Racetrack. What is even the name of that place? It's Bristol Racing Bristol. Place.
Let's just call it Bristol.
Yeah, they're playing it at Bristol. So maybe they'll have a NASCAR game race going around. That would be it while super cool. While they're playing
like the stands are super far out. There's NASCAR going in the outside, and then people are on the inside. Car just randomly runs over half the sideline. Like, why did we schedule this game?
Why did we do this? Fatality.
But, yeah, so again, I think this is going to be a really big game. It's going to be telling whether Tennessee is really this overrated team that shouldn't be even top 25. Or if they just slipped in their first game.
Yeah, because that happens.
It does happen. And it's happened to much better teams than this Tennessee team where they just slip in a game and it could ruin their season. Fortunately, they pulled out a win.
Yeah.
So if they can continue through the rest of the season, their record's still going to look good. And maybe people will forget about, well, remember that week one almost lost to Appalachian State?
Yeah, and it's funny because everybody's treating it like a loss.
Yeah.
But they won.
I mean,
so,
when you have to be Appalachian State in overtime as Tennessee, ranked number 9, it is kind of a loss.
Yeah. So, there's obviously that game. The next one, local game, BYU, Utah. They have the Holy War.
It's back, boys.
Yep.
I'm so excited to watch this game. Of course, we did get Utah versus BYU last year.
Yeah.
35-0 in the first quarter for Utah. Almost brought it back by BYU.
Yeah, and all the BYU fans I talked to, and my uncle is one of these, he's like, BYU is the better team. And you can obviously argue that, and I'd agree with you that BYU is the better team for 75% of that game. But obviously, I guess it was just that one quarter did them in. But that's kind of beside the point, I guess.
Yeah, I could argue for a full hour about BYU fans in general, or even just that one game, why I think Utah was still the better team. I think if you look at this season as a whole, at least, But coming into this game, BYU, close game against Arizona, who couldn't get their offense going, their quarterback couldn't move the ball. And then Utah, who were super slow to get started against SUU. The big thing to note from that game, though, is they did shut out SUU. You can discredit this SUU team all you want, but they shut them out. There was so many. There was like a 71-7 game, a 63-3. These big teams, even Michigan, didn't shut out Hawaii when they're so much better.
Yeah.
I think that's really telling for their defense. Sure, they still have questions here about their quarterbacks, but I think their defense showed that they're going to be forced to be reckoned with.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a really low-scoring game, mainly because, you know, if Utah's defense is – their defense is always good. It's kind of right. Whittingham. And then BYU's defense, I watched some of the Arizona game, not all of it. What I did watch, I was very impressed by that BYU defense.
Yeah,
I looked They were swarming the ball like they couldn't get anywhere. And it's just when they get tackled, there's 5-6 hats on the ball.
Yeah, yeah. Their defense looks good. On the offensive side, Taysom Hill looked average.
He looks like Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
That's just that.
Jamal Williams, though, great running back. If BYU wins this game, it's either going to be a huge defensive play or it's going to be on the back of Jamal Williams.
Yeah, or it's surprised by Taysom Hill. But, yeah, I do agree that Jamal Williams is going to be the key to the game, barring some random player just doing well.
My hope for this game is that it is, like, Utah's up by, like, 3 with, like, 30 or 3 seconds left. BYU's at the 50-yard line. They're going for a Hail Mary. They just put Tanner Mangum in. Go for the Hail Mary. Gets picked off and BYU loses because I hate BYU.
they've had like 3 last second plays in the last year and a half, including the Arizona game. Last year they had like 2 last second games. One was a ridiculous Hail Mary.
Nebraska.
Yeah, Nebraska.
They had quite a few big Hail games won on Hail Marys. So much so that when in my apartment, whenever we were watching a game that required a Hail Mary, we'd all just yell, "Put in Mangum!" So it's kind of like our running joke of like, even this past week, I texted my buddy, "Oh, put in Mangum." And he's like, "I just said that." So I'm excited for this game. As a Utah State fan who hates BYU fans, I actually respect the BYU most of the BYU players and the BYU program.
Hashtag Thug Mormon. That's the best thing that came out of BYU last season.
Yeah. We've joked on my show about Kainakua joining the UFC after college. But he would have to win on like the punch to the back of the head. But so I want Utah to win this game, and I really do think they can pull it out here.
Yeah, this will be a good game. I'd like to watch it. I don't have a TV, so I don't know what I'm gonna do. I don't even know what channel it's on.
You can stream it online somewhere, I'm sure.
Debatably legal.
Debatably legal. Yeah.
All right, so that's probably obviously the game that I'll be watching more than Tennessee, Virginia Tech. The other one, mentioned this early, TCU, Arkansas. Although I was in Arkansas, went on a mission in Arkansas, so I've got all my Razorback gear and stuff. So
nice.
I might be cheering for them, although I do like TCU as well. So
I liked TCU back when they were in the Mountain West. They looked really dominant, and then when they went to a better conference, they continued to look dominant.
Yeah.
So I think, one, that made the Mountain West look good because a good team comes out of the Mountain West and they do good in other conferences. They've been ranked every year since, and they've looked good. I don't think they'll be as good this year, and I actually think Arkansas has a decent chance to upset them here.
Yeah.
But they have a dang good offense.
Yeah.
So
It'll be one of the better games as far as the top 25. Yeah. They're like the only top 25 team that seems to be playing a decent opponent.
Yeah, so these two Tennessee and TCU games, only ranked teams worth watching unless you really like Alabama running up the score or Michigan running up the score. I mean, there's nothing else to watch except for NFL Sunday. Aw, yeah.
The NFL, oh man, football is back.
So excited. L.A. Yeah. Rams game, Monday night football. Can't ask for more.
So you say you're a Rams fan. How do you feel about that move to Los Angeles?
I think it'll be good. unfortunately, this season's not going to be good. But I think in a few years, we'll definitely be playoff contenders. And then hopefully from there, Super Bowl contenders. But we're not going to be good this year. Gurley is one of the best offensive threat. No, he is the best offensive threat in the NFC West that isn't a quarterback. I know that's a lot of, like, conditions.
Yeah, that was a lot.
But he is really good, and he'll be one of the best running backs in a few years. I think he'll be the new Adrian Peterson. Don't take my word for that, but he'll be good.
I'd like to see another Adrian Peterson, because like I said earlier, Adrian Peterson's like the last of the great running backs.
Yeah.
I'd like to see another one of those.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him, but...
All right, so we're about out of time. Do you have any last thoughts before we close?
Nope. NCAA football is going to suck. NFL is going to be really great, really fun to watch.
It's exciting. It's not preseason anymore. All right, so if you want to tweet us, you can tweet me at thejaywonk67. I'm only on Twitter some of the time. I'm getting more into it.
Yeah, but you can tweet me at competitiveUSU. It's the same Twitter I use for our other show. But if you put in Armchair Champions in there, I'll know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So if you have anything you want us to talk about, you can tweet us there. Tell all your friends about this.
Please.
Yeah, well, please.
We should be recording most every Wednesday and releasing it Wednesday night, Thursday morning, depending on how lazy Ethan is.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. Again, I'm Jason Walker.
And I'm Alex King, and we'll catch you next week.